Good morning. Welcome back to the broadcast, Retire Network. This is BRN Weekly for Saturday, April 6th, 2024. And our top story today, we're talking jobs, tea leaves for the stock market. Joining me now to help break it all down, Jane King is a financial journalist joining us from the NASDAQ. Jane, always great to see you. Thanks for popping by the program this morning.
Yeah, great to be here, Jeffrey.
All right. I feel like the market definitely was down at Tuesday. I want to talk about that in a second, but let's talk about jobs. The Department of Labor released its latest employment report. What can you tell us?
Yeah, so this is for the month of March. So the number, headline number, much better than expected, 303,000 jobs created last month. We expected about 200,000. So again, the estimates were way off. The unemployment rate ticked lower, 3.8%. Now, here's kind of need to dig into it a little bit. We've been watching those revisions because the last few months, the previous month or two has been revised with less job growth. They didn't happen this time. The previous 2 months were revised actually a little bit higher, about 22,000 for 2 months. So kind of negligible. But here's some interesting things about this. So 68% of job growth in March came from three sectors. That was leisure and hospitality, government, and education. So I am hearing some people kind of grumble about this government hiring number. Over the past year, we've seen a lot of government hiring, and people are like, why with all these deficits are we hiring more people in the government? And they feel like the private sector should be doing more hiring. It shouldn't be government. And the labor participation rate, they'd like to see that go up as well. It's right around 62%. They'd like to see it 65% or so.
Yeah, I was going to ask you, that was going to be my follow-up. And I would lump, I guess, education, I would lump into government too, right? I mean,
it could be private school education.
Right, but it could be. Yeah. But for the most part, the majority is probably government. But that really begs the question. And let's back up to Tuesday. Market swoon, drop, whatever, however you want to describe it, was pretty significant. How does, just in your, you know, many years of covering Wall Street, covering the market, how does this job report factor into the stock market and its expectations for these Fed rate cuts that you and I have been talking about? I feel like ad nauseum, not because of you, because of me, for a long time.
Well, it definitely makes the Fed's job more complicated. So we've got an economy that's up, interest rates went up as soon as this number was out. So we'll see how the stock market, once it digests all this, which, you know, may take all day today, how it reacts to that. You know, we saw just on Thursday, talk of no interest rate cuts this year, and that was enough to send the Dow down more than 500 points. Today, similar situation with the stronger than expected economy, probably, you know, again, no interest rate cuts, perhaps. And the markets are still positive. So we'll see how the markets trade throughout the day today and next week as they start to digest kind of the granular data of this report.
Yeah. And what other economic data can we expect? Because I feel like there's always stuff dropping every week. Either it's the Fed minutes, the Fed speaks.
Oh, yeah.
It's Labor Department numbers. It's the GDP or revisions to the GDP. When you're looking down the pike, down to next week, what are you looking for in terms of economic data?
So the big thing next week will be inflation. So we get consumer price index next week, and then the producer price index. So that's the raw materials, like what businesses pay for things. So inflation has been stickier than many expected that it would be. So we'll see if that trend continues when those inflation numbers come out next week.
Yeah, it's so fascinating. But for me, Jane, I want to get your feedback on this. A lot of it comes down to interest rates, which to me is the cost of borrowing, the cost of capital. That seems to be driving a lot of the conversations. And maybe it's just you and I, but when I look at, I don't really watch a lot of TV other than your own program, The Innovators. I will say I watch that. But that drives a lot of the conversation, corporate conversation and conversations in markets.
Yeah, I mean, once you kind of have been around markets and business, the economy, you realize how important interest rates are. I mean, it sounds kind of boring, but they're kind of like the blood of the market. I mean, it has to do with everything. Governments borrowing money, consumers borrowing money, pension funds and how they invest. And I mean, it really impacts everything. And we're seeing them creep back higher, and that's what's been spooking the markets this week.
Yeah, really interesting. Well, Jane, always great to see you. Excellent analysis as always. Appreciate you coming on the program. We look forward to having you back next week.
See you next week.
Thanks, Jane. Great to see you. Thanks for sharing your perspective. And when we come back, we'll take a look at some of our best segments for the week. You're going to want to stay tuned right here on BRN Weekly. Imagine a new television network that will make you richer, healthier, and in control of your financial future. This network is for the policewoman in Nashville, Tennessee, the baker in Dubuque, Iowa, the teacher in Lexington, Kentucky. We want to make the idea of savings and retirement culturally relevant. But what do you see as a defining issue of the midterms?
Especially for the smaller businesses, I mean, they are the lifeblood of the American economy.
Featuring exclusive interviews, current affairs, and docuseries. 33 yeah. years old, you retired early.
The philosophy is money only matters if it helps you live a life that you love.
But you got to start thinking about retirement as soon as you get in.
The Broadcast Retirement Network will drive very high engagement with premium partnerships. So this isn't retirement and savings for your parents or grandparents. This is for all Americans. And we're going to change the way you think about money. Welcome to the next frontier of retirement and savings. This is BRN, the Broadcast Retirement Network. Welcome back. It was another great week of programs with great topics and, of course, great guests. We kick off the week with a look at cable networks becoming ghost networks. Let's take a look.
I'm with you. I start most of my TV stories with Once Upon a Time, when there were three networks, and on average, they each got a 33 share of one third of everyone viewing, and then Fox, and then WB, and then UPN, and then cable came. And cable in its heyday was in two thirds of all homes, and that was it, right? Today, based on our report, we were saying that the percent of adults 18 plus who are streaming, whether it's connected TV or on a mobile device of some sort, past 80%. As a matter of fact, just 2 weeks ago, I saw the updated data with the most current 6 months included, and it's now 84%. And if you look at something like cable, less than a roughly a third of all adults have cable, and that's half of what it was in its heyday. What's going on is not just a change in consumer behavior, it's an evolution of the entire TV and video content, field. It's just unreal.
Yeah.
Streaming today dominates. The power we as TV and video content consumers have is unreal. You mentioned, being able to target and whatnot. I find this amazing, but not unexpected. When we talk about those, the silent generation, right? Those 79 years of age and older, when you ask them, what type of ads do you respond to? You know, number one, direct mail. Number two, newspaper circulars. Number three, TV, cable, and satellite TV. And that's all grouped together as one category. But when you start going down in age, like baby boomers, all of a sudden, the digital entity pops into the top three search. is now one of the top three types of ads baby boomers respond to, and they're between the ages of 60 and 78. Then you move down to Gen X, who's 40 to 59. So now we're getting into a key demographic for TV and cable of adults 25, 54. The number one type of ad these people respond to is a search ad. Number two is an ad on that mobile device you were just holding up in either an app or a text message. Number three is streaming TV. Now let's go under 40. For those 18 to 24 and 25 to 39. So now we're in the 18 to 49 year old key demo. And when it comes to branding, which every major company wants to get a hold of that target group, these younger adults, number one is social. The number two type of ad these people tend to respond to is a streaming TV ad, followed then by that mobile device. So you're right. Not only is there an evolution in what's going on, the younger generation, and as they age into the older age groups, the percent of total adult streaming is just going to continue to go up from the current 84%. It's going to keep rising. There are some powerhouses out there. For instance, according to Nielsen, right, the experts in measuring TV. And I'm going to talk now, forget that mobile device, tablets. Well, I'm just talking TV set viewership. More people at any given time, right now, more people are streaming something on their television set than watching any cable or broadcast TV. Something just over 36% of everyone watching TV right now is viewing a streaming service. And 1/4 of those people are specifically tuned into YouTube. And the vast majority of that is YouTube free, not the paid. I mean, so yeah, you want to reach an audience, a huge audience like the broadcast networks used to be able to do. Yeah, you've got YouTube and one or two other very strong, but you're right. I mean, over the course of time, fragmentation, especially amongst the lower tier, you know, they start sharing viewers and whatnot. But with digital, it almost doesn't matter, right? Think about something like real-time bidding and programmatic advertising, right? Doesn't matter where my target group is, I can hit them wherever they are. And that's a huge benefit as opposed to, give me an ad on this in this cable household, because the information tends to be on the head of household, which has nothing to do with his 22-year-old daughter.
It's true.
And, you know, she's not going to want to watch the, you know, I don't want to get into the specific advertisers and advertising, but with digital, it doesn't matter. But there are still, I mean, YouTube is unfriggin' real, pardon my language.
And next up, we discussed how your primary care physician can help you with mental health concerns. Let's take a look.
Mental health is something as a primary care physician, I try to address with everyone that walks in through my doors. You know, I think it's a combination of just the things that we've been through over the past few years, COVID and isolation and, you know, with social media and being able to compare people. And it's just the amalgamation of all of that together. We've definitely seen an uptick in just mental health diseases in general. I think the other thing is in general, people are more willing to talk about it, especially if it's something that I bring up initially. And I will say most primary care physicians feel very comfortable, at least with the initial evaluation and management of things like depression, anxiety, PTSD, OCD, things like that. We have screening tools that help us, and there's actually been some changes in, you know, national recommendations for screening for things like this that we have adopted here in our clinic. So every year when you come in for an annual checkup, we are actually screening people to see if they have any symptoms of underlying depression or anxiety. Oftentimes that will open up, you know, the window of opportunity to talk about it and talk about different options for treatment. So even if you have never previously seen a psychiatrist or a therapist, your PCP can help you. And I think, you know, we work definitely collaboratively with therapists. And I tell my patients all the time, you may not necessarily need me to prescribe medications, but we can help put in referrals for therapists. And I tell people, they're finding a good therapist is almost like speed dating. You might have to quickly go through several until you find the one that really connects with you. But oftentimes when you find that therapist that works, it can be, you know, life-changing.
And that wraps up this episode of BRN Weekly. Have a topic of interest, someone you think we should talk to, then drop us a line. And don't forget, for all the latest curated news in lifestyle, wellness, finance, tech, so much more in all in one place, check out today's edition of our daily newsletter, The Morning Pulse. Want to search our archives, check out our latest content? Well, then visit our website. We're back again tomorrow for another edition of BRN Sunday. I know you guys all missed it. I did as well, but we had to put it on pause because of the Easter holiday. I'll be joined by the Legal Eagles, David Levine, Kevin Walsh, both of Groom Law Group, and then Oliver Rennick of the Schwab Network will be here to help break down markets and the economy. You're not going to want to miss it. Until then, I'm Jeff Snyder. Stay safe, keep on saving, and don't forget, roll with the changes. Now is your opportunity to co-create content around any topic on the First Lifestyle and Wellness Network. Reach a global audience through our platform and co-own exclusive branded content. All of our programs are available on demand and also as audio-only podcasts, so you can take us on the go. Broadcast Retirement Network, available anytime, anywhere, and on any device.